This week's episode of Inside Running Podcast is proudly sponsored by Nike. Marking the next chapter of Nike's relentless focus on innovating for all runners, the new Nike Alphafly 3 delivers marathon speed to push beyond what you thought possible. It's their lightest and most tested Alphafly ever, validated by elite marathoners and designed to help all athletes chase their personal best in the marathon, no matter their pace. Welcome, crew, to the Shoe Geeks March episode. Here with two fellas that we haven't heard from much lately, both in the running scene as well as the footwear scene, but hopefully that changes soon. So firstly, Nidda from Adelaide. Well, what do you do? You're at home a lot these days, aren't you? You don't do a lot of stuff in the office?
No, I'm in the office enough. I've been there at least 4 days a week. So I get Wednesdays off, though, because it's Zara's childcare day. I drop her off, come back home, and I do what I please on Wednesday. So we're going to build a presentation, though, this week. That's the goal for today.
Oh, yeah. What's that for?
That's for the same presentation, the run to the top symposium in Melbourne next week, which you should know well about because you're presenting first.
Well, what are you presenting on there?
I'm going to do load management, the difference between infield and clinical management.
Oh, sounds boring.
Yeah.
Tommy,
how are you going to make that exciting, Nidda?
I can always make this exciting. Canva, good picks. Yeah.
Nice.
Good data.
You would have bought a ticket to that, Tom, to come down and hear from
Nidda? No, unfortunately, I won't be able to hear you two guys chatting. So you'll have to let me know how it goes.
I won't be there. Sad you're not there. We could have gone for a run. We could have dropped Nidda on the first hill around the tan.
I'm climbing okay. That's all I do these days. I'm climbing okay.
Tom.
I'm good.
Last time we spoke, you were going to go to the Olympics. How's that going?
Yeah, I threw my hat in the ring, didn't I? And then I got on the pod and filled in for you. So you're definitely part of this. I got pretty excited that night, get the call up for the main pod, pretty excited, didn't sleep well that night, just so excited. Wake up in the morning, sore throat, the sickness began. I messaged Brady, I'm like, mate, didn't get to do Osaka. So, I've only really just come good, to be honest. It's like this is probably one of my worst ones. 3 weeks of feeling a bit under the weather, didn't run for almost 2 weeks. I'm getting back into things now. Yeah, it was like 12 days, no running at all. Which is ridiculous, right? Just for whatever it was.
Nidda, why does he get sick so often?
Look, he's got two kids first.
They're old. They're pretty old, the kids.
Yeah, you haven't been sick for... Yeah. But you haven't been sick for a while, Tom. Granted, this was a bit unlucky because you had a really good run into Valencia and at the back of Valencia as well. So, but look, when you're a super, super fit like Tom, he's on the edge, a couple of bad nights sleep and maybe doing a podcast when he shouldn't be doing a podcast, he should be sleeping. I don't know. Look, he's probably on the edge all the time. He's about as fit and as thin. He's about as optimal endurance you can possibly be, I reckon. So I'm being nice here.
Please enlighten us, Moose, on why I get sick.
I don't know what. I'm asking the expert.
Oh, no, you know. You've got an idea.
I've got theories. Yeah. And I just think, perhaps you're a little underfueled, mate. Maybe you're just working in this red zone too often. You're too focused on cutting weight and not enough on feeding that body.
It's a fair outsider's thought. I'll give you that.
Well, something's got to change. Surely you look back and go, I'm getting sick so often. What is wrong with me? My immune.
Yeah, but he was aiming to run sub 210. He was always going to be on the edge. You know, sometimes you get away with it, and it's a Hail Mary. He's not aiming to run a marathon every 4 weeks like Reese Edwards. He's trying to run a good one like once a year.
There's definitely things I can do, but I do think there's like a genetic. I'm going to blame genetics. I'm going to blame I get sick twice a year every single year, basically, no matter what I do. And then kids have just made things worse. I'll blame kids as well. But anyway, I can't complain. Anyway. It's the worst things can happen than not being able to race. You can pull out at halfway.
Well, yeah. You save some money because it was a rough day. No way you're running 210 over there. No way. All right. What have we been running then? Nito, why don't you start us off with New Balance? You start us off.
Yeah, look. These have been like a couple of new shoes this month, but we're going to start off with, I'll start off with the Rebel V4. I know Tom will probably want to contribute through here. This is a update from the second and third versions were relatively similar, weren't they, Tom? You like them as a very simplistic, traditional, but a traditional sort of size midsole, less than about 35 mils, but the foam is so soft and compliant. This here has got a bit of an upgrade in terms of its size, its beef. It kept with this, the geometry of the midsole is this, what sort of cut design do they call it, Julian? It's like a specifically...
Yeah, I don't know what it's called. It's like a 3D model type, 3D printing almost in terms of like where they can shave off.
Exactly, weight. Trying to remove bits here, there and everywhere. And look, the fuel cell foam is still really, really soft. I think, Tom, you found it a little bit firmer, probably because there's a bit more of it compared to the previous models. But they've made it a bit more stable than previous, like just having more surface area beneath the shoe. Look, it's still a shoe that after 30 to 40 minutes for me feels like I'm hitting the ground. It does bottom out a little bit, so I'm finding it a bit of a sometime shoe. I noticed a few of the pros sponsored by New Balance are sort of endorsing it as a workout shoe without a plate, which I think we've seen that concept come and go the last 3 to 4 years to not train in plates too often, whether there's any merit to it or not. But I have done a faster workout in this shoe, on a hybrid workout between the track and the gravel, and it actually worked out pretty well. So it weighs nothing. I think it's about 170 grams for my size 10, maybe just a bit over, closer to 180, but it is a lightweight, stable shoe. And the shoe that I've worn probably a little
180.
Yeah, it's a bit under 200 grams, so it's quite light. And this shoe through here is probably it's probably around about 240 grams, so it's a bit heavier. This is the Supercomp Elite V4. So look, this is Ellie's shoe, Julian, and I guess it is quite a decent upgrade from the third version overall in terms of the super shoe category. Once again, the midsole has, you know, the laser cutout. It has the MG arc in the midsole, which we've seen in the last model as well. But we are seeing probably a bit more of a stacked forefoot. The weight of the shoe's gone up a fair bit. I reckon probably gone up around about 10% from the previous version, maybe up to 20% more, which is the only downside. But I didn't feel the weight was a massive issue in this shoe. But categorically compared to like putting on an Alpha Fly or a Vapor Fly, the weight is the one thing that probably does feel a bit different when you're doing, you know, a workout in this particular shoe. Feels very protective. But I reckon it's probably, you know, this is going to be a marathon shoe that fits a lot more of the population as well. So it's going to have more room for error. It's a bit more stable, a bit more protective. And I've worn it on a couple of long runs as well. And look, I find it categorically, if I was to have a guess at what my economy would be like in a shoe comparatively, it does feel a bit like the performance that I get from a Super Blast without the plate, obviously. So I don't feel it's much different, even though it's in the super shoe category. But that could just be purely because it's a little bit heavier as well. So how have you guys gone with the New Balance?
I think the Supercomp, that Elite V4, I mean, so I've never used any of the previous race models. So I don't really have much of a comparison within New Balance, but it does seem like a mass market marathon shoe in the sense that it is nice and stable. It's going to suit like wider, broader feet. It's a really nice, roomy, boxy toe box and upper. It's deep and it's wide. So Definitely suits that sort of foot, and it's soft, but it's not mushy soft. It's not like Rebel soft, because it's got enough, it's got more stack. It feels a bit hydrometer than the Rebel, and it's got the plate. It won't bottom out. Like, you can be a big guy or big girl. And I think it's going to suit, either faster. Well, maybe not faster running, because I do feel like it's a little bit heavy for the faster stuff, but it definitely would suit the longer workouts, bigger body mass, people that need a little bit more stability. Mm-hmm. For sure. I've not done much in it.
One thing we haven't mentioned is that it's the first full Piba midsole that New Balance has brought out in their in any of their shoes. So previously it's been 20% Piba and then 80% something else. I don't even know what it was, EVA, TPU, something like that. Whereas now this model here has gone full Piba, and so we should see a lot more performance come from that foam, and it's maybe the reason why we don't feel like we're going to bottom it out, and it can handle a bit more load. Feels a little bit more gutsy, but you're right. Some of the big things in store that made this shoe popular is the volume. So a lot of different foot shapes to come in. The rear foot stability. The shoe can handle rear foot strike. It can handle slower paces. It can handle a bit of shuffling. It's durable through the forefoot. So we got a lot of outsole, which can make it more practical for someone running a bit of dirt, a bit of concrete, and doing more in it. And then the heel cup has caused a few issues for some people. You can sort of see it just pinches back a little bit there, like shapes back towards the Achilles. So for some people, it's been rubbing. I didn't have that issue. I got a little bit of a slip. You can see that I lace lock it just to secure it. I've been using this shoe as a super blast replacement. So days I feel good on, just easy days that I feel good, I go for a run in that. I've done a workout in it. It did feel a little harder to change gears than some of the other shoes. I know you love the shoe, the term bottom heavy, but it feels like there's a lot underneath. And the upper is pretty light, so that tends. I don't normally love that type of feeling in a shoe.
Look, it's to me, it feels like, compared to the shoe list I have, it does feel like a super trainer. But for the general population, that's a performance running shoe for the marathons for most people as well. Same as the Super Blast. So, you remember the obviously the Super Comp Trainer and even the V3 Elite, they had the little rubber patch in the middle, and they had the big exposed foam. Like, there's so much gravel that we do our running, our workouts at the Uni Loop in Adelaide, is that this has been a nice little update through here. There's been no exposed foam, just shredding. Not that it changes the performance of the shoe too much, but people are more inclined to whinge about the shoe's durability when they start to see shredded exposed foam in a super shoe. So a very durable shoe as well. So a real workhorse in that category of long shoe and long rep shoe as well.
And you look at a marathon and you look at the finish times, and there's a splattering of people under 2 hours 45, and then there's a few between 2 hours 45 and three to three and a half, we're getting more, three and a half to four, there's more, and then four to four and a half is the most, I think it's even more than that, 4 to 5 hours is the most common finish time. So these types of shoes aim to suit more of the market, and I really like, we've sold a ton of these in store. At the moment, we have heaps of super shoes. So when someone comes in, they're putting multiple shoes on the foot, they're running in the treddy, they're actually able to compare super shoes. It's not just buy them immediately when they release. They can come in and find what's best for them. And that's why this has been so successful, because they're thinking about what will happen in the last half an hour of their marathon, not the first half an hour.
I think what Tom mentioned as well is that, like, the bigger bodied marathon runner, for example, as well, this is probably the best super shoe or super trainer on the market for that heavier population, I reckon. So, which is you would know, Julian, it's a pretty high cohort of people buying shoes for marathons now as well. Anything over 3.5 hours, the shoe's probably a safe option for them as well.
Yeah. And I would say that's probably, go for it.
Oh, it's just not it's not super soft, so you can wear it multiple places, and it just feels a bit safer. To even like,
because not everyone wants to take a shoe to the track, warm up in one, change to another, change back.
Yeah.
It's a shoe that can do everything. Like, you can warm up in it. You can jog in it if you want. Like the Super Blast, it sort of fits in that category in the middle.
It does.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is where it's different from the Rebel. I think the Rebel is the other way around. It suits the light runner because it is. I don't know, Nita, you said that I did say that it felt firm, but I'm not sure whether that's because it actually bottoms out as soon as I'm running in it. It's like, because it actually does feel firmer, but when you press the midsole, you press this, any shoe I get, I'll grab the shoe and I'll like squeeze it and I want to feel for the softness. So I squeeze, I've squeezed a lot of shoes in my day and it feels very soft to touch, but when I'm running in it, it feels kind of firm. So I do feel like I'm straight away maybe reaching its limit of compression, and then I'm feeling it kind of bottoming out. And it's not as soft.
It's funny you mentioned that. It's like, because the durometer of the foam has to be lower than their Supercomp Elite V4. But I feel like I'm almost bottoming it out instantly. So like, if I want to feel comfortable in this shoe, like I'm taking 3 or 4 steps per minute. More my cadence rate's going up in this particular shoe because I don't want to hit the ground too hard. So I am running a bit lighter in the shoe because I know I'm bottoming it out. If I go and take a long stride in this shoe as well, I feel like I'm hitting the ground almost immediately. So the shoe feels quite firm. But if I'm a bit more pitter-pattery and lighter, it tends to work well. So I'm assuming if I drop 10 kilos in weight, this shoe would actually probably feel quite soft beneath my foot.
I can give you some tips on that.
So I feel like I'm bottoming out this one, but I feel like I'm trying to get as much out of this one I can, so I'm hitting the ground much harder. So they're quite polarizing shoes, I agree, in terms of like what they're for. But look, hey, that might be a good strategy from New Balance to try and change load a little bit from day to day, so not a bad option.
I have a pair of Rebels, but I haven't run in them yet. I haven't really found a run that suited what that shoe would do for me. I'm not sure I have that type of run in my rotation of runs. I don't think it would handle where I run too well, like corrugated dirt roads. It looks a little bit too soft for that.
No, it's okay. Look, you probably feel the rocks a little bit if you've got big rocks, but like the day that you do your strides at the end or your heel sprints after your jog, for example, I reckon it's a perfect shoe for that. Like, get your 30 to 50 minutes out and then do your heel strides. Yeah. It's sort of the 1-2 punch.
I probably haven't done strides in 6 or 7 years, I don't reckon.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I've got a shoe here that's come out at around the same time that actually it was just inevitable that we started to compare them because they both released very similar times. This is the Saucony Endorphin Pro 4. So this the Pro 3 was quite a popular shoe with us in store. It felt a little bit more stable than other super shoes. It was a little bit more to the ground. Like, when I say to the ground, this is real weird term, but you didn't feel like you were super high stacked. You felt really secure through the midfoot. You felt a lot more in control. Like, I would have used it for cross country races if it was a smooth course. And that was probably to its detriment because I would never have run a marathon in it because it always felt a little bit too firm for me. Maybe not soft enough. So Saucony, in their performance range, they have two types of foam. They have PowerArm PB and then they have PowerRun HG, or PowerRun PB Plus and then HG. HG is the non-palletized version of the foam, so it's more the slab of PBA, and the PowerRun PB Plus I'm no good with the terms anymore, but that is the palletized version, and so it tends to feel softer, where the HG is a firmer compound, but it returns more energy. And so the Endorphin Elite is made of HG. Now, they get the softness from being quite a high stack, and they have a little bit more – that shoe has more rocker in it. So although the shoe's firmer, you're getting this roll across the forefoot, and it doesn't feel as slappy as being like a firm traditional shoe. The Endorphin Pro 4 feels a little flatter. Definitely not as rocked. There's not as much toe spring as the Endorphin Elite. To me, it feels a little bouncier than the Pro 3. So the HD is certainly working in that regard. Underfoot, it's stable enough. You can see that there's a fairly good platform under there. The outer sole is most likely an improvement. I haven't used it in the wet yet, so I think it'll be an improvement on the previous model. It's quite a narrow fit through the forefoot. You can see it tapers really quickly. I found that I got a bit of a numb foot, and I think that's I used a heel wedge in it, and it just took up too much volume. So I needed to go. I needed to take that heel pitch out and use a thinner sock because it was just a bit too tight through this area for me. It's been popular in store. It gives the feeling of being in touch with the ground still compared to some of the others. So if you compare it to the New Balance, this thing feels a lot more like a trainer than the Endorphin Pro, which to me feels like I would want to run fast in it. And this one doesn't really feel like this one feels like I'll do a tempo run. This one feels like I'll do intervals.
Got it.
Through the back, so again, it's not the best lockdown through the heel. So again, I've lace locked it. I'm just feeling like a lot of shoes are missing the mark with the heel cups at the moment.
In terms of like choosing that shoe or the Endorphin Elite for race day for you, what are you thinking?
The Endorphin Elite is really aggressive rocker, really aggressive toe spring, and I think that can throw some people. This feels a lot more stable, feel a lot more grounded. You feel more in control of what happens underfoot. I'm gonna do a heap more workouts in this over the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks because I want to get back to the feeling of like getting away from the big high stack super shoe, just for the time being. I'll still bust those out for the long marathon workouts, but if I've got thresholds or I've got faster interval reps, then I'm going to go back to this shoe.
And the speed, I'm assuming it's the same shoe with a nylon plate?
The speed, oh, geez. I'm not sure about that. You got to give us a sec. You go talk about the next shoe you've been running in.
Well, I was always remembering the speed one and two, for example, were literally the same shoe as the Pro One and Pro Two, but they had the nylon plate instead of the carbon plate, and they changed it a bit in the third version. They made it more for like the everyday consumer. You could use it for an easy day, a tempo day, or even a workout day. The Speed Three, so it was a hugely popular shoe, but that was quite different from the Pro. I think the foam was different and the plate was different. So when I saw these two shoes come out again, they looked very similar. The Pro 4 and the Speed 4 looked almost identical. So I'm assuming it was just going back to the plate change potentially, or unless there was a stack height change and foam change.
I don't think that there's HG in this foam.
Got it.
In the Speed. I don't have one in front of me, and I actually I should know that, but I'm just on their website now. And it doesn't mention that they have HG in the let me just keep going down here. Power Run
HG. Does it feel softer?
No, it does say there's Power Run HG through the midfoot. Forefoot.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's say that they're the same, but with that winged plate. In store, like I haven't run in the Speed. They came in when I was away and I haven't really put it on too many people. The people that I have put it on so far have actually really liked it. And it feels more like a performance trainer. But again, it doesn't, although it's high stack, it doesn't feel high stack. You feel a lot more connected to the ground and you feel more in control versus say like the Super Comp trainer where you're really high offset and it's almost like a very foreign experience.
Good. Is it softer than the? Does it feel noticeably softer, the Speed versus Pro?
Not softer, but the flexibility difference is massive. You really like the nylon plate. I can flex the shoe. I can flex it and I can flex it torsionally or whatever you call it. But the Pro you can't really. It's stiff. It's carbon, like it's proper carbon plate in there. Real rigid.
And the weight would be pretty similar, right?
I think it's a little heavier in the Speed slightly. Okay. The plate it's probably a thicker upper. It's probably a little bit more. Okay. Yeah, I'm just trying to find the weights of them. They're not on their they're not on their website.
People that like the version 3 of each of those, how are they going to go with the updates?
Yeah, no problems. I don't think there'll be any issue updating. I think we've got a couple of Pro 3 wearers in the store, like staff. And I know that they're already eyeing off a pair, and they said that it actually feels a little bit softer. And the Endorphin Speed wear, I won't notice too much of a difference, I don't think.
Interesting. Yeah. Tell us the minimal shoes you've been running in, Tom.
So I was going to ask you guys after we moved on from Rebel, like, because basically I'm missing that from my rotation, and the Rebel I've added to the rotation now is my sort of light, flexible, soft, slightly lower stack, because I do like enjoy running in shoes that aren't high stack all the time. So I'm enjoying the Rebel, although I don't enjoy it as much as the previous two versions, just because the previous two actually felt softer. But it's fine. I'm still enjoying it. But what else would you recommend? I'm on the lookout to purchase a light, flexible. I've been eyeing off the new Mach 6 from Hoka. What else would you suggest?
Terra Kyga. You need to get in a Terra Kyga and run those trails where you live, because that shoe is so smooth underfoot. Mm. And that's a 4mm offset, I think. And it's got a decent little bit of cushion for what it is. Super nice fit. That's the best thing. Like, you put Nike's dialed in that lacing system on that shoe. It's got some good volume through the upper. The grip's okay for what you probably need in that Royal National Park. Is that what it's called? Royal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Royal Park. Is there a Zoom unit or no?
I don't think so. No.
I've only ever worn the original. I actually quite liked it, but it, you know, had that 4 foot Zoom unit, which I prefer just to have foam.
Yeah, certainly doesn't feel like you can't feel it. To me, it feels very smooth, and and it's very stable on trails. Like, and it sort of brings me to the next shoe that I was going to talk about, because I've got two Nike trail shoes in the rotation right now. One of them's the Terra Kyga, which doesn't have a plate, is flexible. I think it uses I've got to be more dialed in with these specs, but it doesn't use Zoom X. This is a it's only $200, and it's very adaptable to the trails. So every time I put my foot down, it contorts to the contour of the trail. And so I very rarely roll my ankle. It's great for me because I've got stiff ankles and the shoe works around that. And so I take it on the single track all the time. I couldn't help myself. These came in the store the other day, and I've sort of resisted it because I didn't immediately love the feel just stepping in. And I wondered like what the purpose really was for me, but I just couldn't help myself. So I grabbed a pair of this, which is the Nike Zoom X Ultrafly. So Zoom X in the whole midsole is Zoom X, but it does have this plate in the shoe as well, which I think is forked. The idea being that contorts or is a little bit more adaptable to the trail, but it's so flexible. It really doesn't work at all. It's as stiff as a Zoom, like as a Vaporfly. And to add to that stiffness, it's got a full length outer sole, like a big slab of Vibram, and there's no flex grooves in it. So the shoe is really stiff. It's got very minimal toe spring or rocker. The Zoom X feels like a totally different compound to the Zoom X that we see in their actual Vaporflies and Alphaflies. It doesn't feel anywhere near as soft. There's something about it that's so really stable though.
I found that shoe when I put it on the foot was really hard to get the toe off, Julian. Like, I found it was just like, as soon as I hit the heel of the midfoot, getting myself off the forefoot felt like it was a hard work to do. I had to really work against it. I reckon, it's a tricky issue, I reckon.
It is.
It just sounds too stiff for its geometry. Like, if you're going to not have a huge rocker, it's got to be more flexible.
I've put... Like, I run a combination of asphalt. Like, my run this morning was was sort of the perfect test of the shoe. So I run on a dirt road, jump on a single track for 4 or 5K, pop out, run on a dirt road, then I run some light trail around the coast, and then I run up an asphalt hill for 2 or 3K. And so I get to test it on everything. And it, funnily enough, it actually feels a lot smoother on the road and the really light dirt roads than it does on the trails, even though it's designed for trails. And I don't find it that hard to get over the plate like you do, Nita, probably because I'm a heavier person. I can get over it fine. I also found that it is really stable for different foot like strikes. So even as a rear foot striker, ZoomX normally really unstable, but there's something about this that's, that makes it really stable to land through the back and then through the forefoot. I actually feels like it encourages me to land on the forefoot for some reason, probably because it's so stiff and I just like I want to already get forward. The upper's generous fit. Nike's really listening, I think, in terms of making their shoes more adaptable for different foot types now.
I noticed that in the Vomero, even the Vomero and the new structure, they weren't purely anatomical forefoot, but they were the closest shoes that Nike have ever created to feeling more anatomical. So
we're getting there.
Tom, back to your question. I saw a patient only a couple of days ago, late last week, come in with the Reebok Float Ride Energy 5. And I hadn't seen that since you were wearing it. And that looks and feels very traditional still. So, maybe a bit more high stack back in the days when you were wearing the second version. But have you thought about going back to that at all? Remember when you did your little online purchase and
Nah, I haven't. I haven't. The one shoe I tried on recently was the, what's it called? It's an Adidas model, SL.
SL 20.
It's not SL 20. It's just called Adizero SL. It's not the 20. The 20 was more of like a racing flat. This one is just like the daily trainer, but it's like more traditional stack, pretty light. Yeah. But it runs relatively firm. Like I put it on and it was like a little bit
too firm. Have you tried the Rise?
No. I heard it sounds pretty good.
It's pretty traditional still, but maybe a little bit higher up the ground, but it wouldn't be far for a traditional shoe. So I haven't tried it yet.
Yeah. It's getting harder and harder to find these shoes at the moment in this market. Yeah.
Kinvara still exists.
Yeah. I've not worn Kinvara for many, many years.
Yeah.
The whole four mil drop thing annoys me. I have to chuck in huge heel lifts. But that's okay.
So you're looking for offset, low stack shoe.
Yeah.
What about
I'm pretty niche.
The Adios 8. It's a bit more like a Street Fly category. It's probably a bit higher up the ground. What's Lana wearing?
Yeah, Adios. So she loves her Boston 12s. Huge fan. Like she wants to do all her running in. Then I'm like, just save them for some faster stuff. She loves that shoe. She's got the Pro as well, but she prefers to race. This is an interesting case for her. Like she feels faster and more comfortable in the Boston than the Pro.
Fair enough.
I think she's just too unstable in the Pro, just wobbling all over the place.
Pro 3? Pro 3?
Yeah. The Adidas Pro 3.
Pro 2, remember how inverted that shoe, or how much varus that whole shoe was? That was the most unstable racing flat I've ever worn. And because of this firmish type foam, I had to put a lateral wedge under the sock liner just to try and straighten it up, but there was no space in the shoe to do that. So, interesting. Julie, I got a question for you. When's your release date or the stocking date of the new Paris, the Asics Edge Paris?
I was going to ask that.
Paris. Yeah.
So the shoe arrives in our store today and we release it on the 15th, both of them. So we have the Metaspeed Edge Paris and the Metaspeed Sky Paris. big drop in weights here. So well, let me pull the tech sheet up and I won't butcher this one. So the tech sheet.
I think I know it. It's 183, isn't it? Weight wise for a 9 US.
Yeah.
It's, I heard it's 10% lighter than the previous models.
I've got that's the decent. I've got the stack, like the tech stuff just came through here. It's actually a really nice 8% lighter. 8% lighter. It has new foam, right? Flight foam turbo plus. So 8% lighter compared to the flight foam turbo, 8.2% bouncier compared to flight foam turbo, and 6% softer compared to the previous flight foam. So those things, they are good numbers right there.
Well, I've had the Edge, I've had the Edge Paris on the foot and it feels fantastic. So, but people are going to have trouble picking between the two by the sounds of it. There's not a huge, there's subtle changes between the two of them now.
Yeah. So with the Metaspeed Sky, there's less foam above the plate, and with the Metaspeed Edge, more foam above the plate.
So let's get stuck into that a little bit. We'll probably talk about it when we actually wear the shoe, but the theory was that when there was more foam beneath the plate, it was associated with slightly better economy. So that's why they still thought the Sky was going to be the number one shoe selected. But I don't think the curved plate and the high plate is going to have that much difference between them. And I think the feedback in the early days from the Edge and the Sky Paris is that people are finding the Edge may be more comfortable in the forefoot, so softer in the forefoot, which makes sense. There's more foam between the foot and the plate. So comfort has to play a bit of a role in there as well. Whereas I think the stack height is both 36 in the forefoot, 39 and a half in the rear foot, and 36 to 35 and a half in the forefoot, with the plate design being
34 and a half.
Yep. So the plate being a bit the major difference between the two shoes, really. Yeah. And so they've changed the outsole color from the Sky and the Edge just to separate them a touch more as well, because they look pretty similar. And I think there's a bit more surface aerial flare in the forefoot of the Sky. So if you look straight down on top of the shoe, there's more flare in the forefoot. So a bigger window of striking the forefoot. So they're trying to promote that stride runner still by having more sweet spot in the forefoot for the Sky by the sounds of it. But I think
pushing that concept of shoe for biomechanics, stride length.
I think a bit less now though. Like I think they're pretty accustomed that it's not a big deal compared to the previous one. But are they still marketing like that, Julian, for sales?
Well, this is the problem, is the shoe, they can't market for sales unless they're educating their retail staff. And we don't really get that flow through from either the design team or the biomechanics team or the product team. Doesn't really flow through well enough. It's part of the problem of the disconnect is that we get sent all the specs and it's almost like interpret it yourself. Or listen to the podcast where an ASICS person might go on and discuss it. So the best thing about this is we're going to have both shoes in store and the runner can decide themselves, because this has always been the issue with shoes and people. We perceive stuff differently. So how we were discussing before about the Ultrafly, you struggling to get over the plate, perhaps some people will feel like that in the Sky. Perhaps the Sky will suit that heavier, slower cadence, more rear foot type athlete. And the cadence, the idea being that, I mean, the Edge being the higher cadence, sort of shorter stride, less force going through the shoe. Perhaps that's how it's going to work out. I don't know. I'll be able to run in it later today and let you guys know. I'll run in both of them on the Treddy. It'd be a good experiment.
But the biggest walkaway point is that they're pretty similar. The plate designs will be what you would tell the customer if that's the major difference, and perhaps maybe a bit more surface area on the forefoot. But it looks like the foam, and it definitely feels like the foam is the biggest upgrade in this shoe. So it's better shoe because of the foam.
And that, to me, now we're seeing like the fifth, sixth version of super shoes come out. Like Vaporfly, we've sort of seen a bunch of versions. We're seeing like the foams are really the the magic sauce in the shoes, yeah, for me anyway. Like, I can deal with the plate being a little different and the outer sole being a little different and whatever. But if someone's using a foam that's head and shoulders above the other shoes, then I want that. I want to be in that type of foam. And it looks like ASICS have created that. Again, I get a chance to feel it later. I can confirm everything. I'll put something up on our socials and then we can share it to the inside running page. We'll see how we go anyway. Yep. But I'll send a video to you guys.
Yep. That sounds good.
I'm keen to hear your thoughts on Edge versus Vaporfly. When I tried on one of Ed's prototypes, it felt like a Vaporfly. But maybe it's going to be a better Vaporfly.
Yeah, well, it's lighter.
Interesting.
It's lighter. We know you love weight and taking and the lowest weight possible.
Oh, please give it to me.
In all aspects.
Well, Tom, you did say you wanted to chat a bit more about the Alphafly 3 because we haven't really spoke to you since you have worn it a bit more. That was a shoe you were going to wear. You were going to wear that on race day, weren't you?
Yes, I was going to wear it. So what have I done in it? Geez, I don't remember now. It's a long time. I feel like I haven't run for a couple of years. I did a couple of longer workouts in it, and it definitely, for me, worked a lot better than previous iterations of Alpha. I think for the fact that it felt smoother and lighter, just those two factors, I was able to maintain my sort of what to me feels like my preferred cadence, whereas the Alpha previous iterations, it felt like, like I was slowing my cadence down, made me work a little bit harder. So I think it's a good update. I'm just keen to give it a proper go. I did a 10K. Actually, I did that 10K race in it, Sunrun.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So hilly hard 10K, performed well. I was quite happy with it. I mean, don't know what else to say. You guys have spoken about it on the last ep. It's a good update.
Well, yeah, we have a short interview coming up with Elliot Heath, who's a product line manager at Nike. And if you remember Elliot Heath, he ran with the Bowman Track Club. He was quite an international level athlete, works for Nike now. So I have a chat to him about the Alphafly 3 after this episode. We'll tack it on the end.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Did you see Nitta, that paper Woodcammer, who's like the original 4% paper guy, he did another one on like plate stiffness and its effect on running economy.
I didn't see it. I did. Yeah, someone summarized it on Twitter. I can't remember, but give us this.
It's like it's not. It's like a preprint. I don't think it's even published yet. I think it's it's coming out soon, I guess. But it was interesting because there was that one which I quote a fair bit where they did a study on the 4% and they sliced the plate in the forefoot, and they showed that the subjects, I think they had 20 or so subjects, there was actually no significant change in running economy. So it's like the plate wasn't actually a huge factor in improved running economy in the 4%.
Yeah.
But they did this study on three shoes, like a shoe without a plate, like they're all like Piba based shoes, high stack, but one control shoe, no plate, and then they had two stiffnesses. So they had one that was like, they call like moderate stiffness, and then one that was like very stiff. And this is actually, I like this principle because this study sort of like justified the Goldilocks principle. So basically, as you'd expect, it was the middle one, the moderately stiff one. Actually, most people had the best running economy with a carbon plate that wasn't too stiff. And it just got me thinking like about the whole, I think over the years, like that's a big factor for me is like just that. And we're talking about like the Ultrafly, like the stiffness thing. I don't think I'd like that shoe that much because I've got a long foot. I've got a history of Achilles issues. Anything that's too stiff, I feel like it sort of impacts my comfort levels. So I think that's the other factor for people choosing shoes. Like there's obviously, and it's also subject specific. So that was the average effect, but I know there's another study that's done something similar, and they did like the subject specific data, like the pool data was, there was no difference between the stiffness. So in that study, this other study, there was no difference when they pulled all the data, like the stiff versus the non-stiff, no difference in running economy. But when they did subject specific, there was a significant difference in thirds. So there was like the top third and bottom third of people that actually some did better in the stiffest, some did worse in the stiffest. So I reckon that's just a factor.
Was there any subject attributes that sort of matched it? Like intuitively, you'd think that big body weight probably handles a stiffer carbon plate more than a lighter body weight, for example, as well. I tried the X-Step 5.0. The carbon plate in that was like, it was like 2 to 3 millimeters of like TL 2100 type stiffness on top of foam that was relatively firm. And like, I just couldn't use the shoe. It was just too stiff for me. It felt good up and down, like I could do skipping in it. It felt brilliant, but as soon as I went forward, like I couldn't flex, and it was just like past the sweet spot. You can almost feel when it goes past the sweet spot.
Yeah. So I reckon that'll be also a situation with the Sky and Edge Paris, because I don't know. Obviously, I haven't got the shoes, I haven't played with them, but going off the Plus versions, the current versions, the Sky is just so much stiffer. It's not just to do with the like the position of the, or maybe it is to do with the position of the plate, or because it's flatter, it's probably stiffer. But yeah, it's just the Sky was like so much stiffer. I think that's part of the reason why I preferred the Edge.
Edge wasn't really a super shoe either, was it? Like it wasn't high enough stack in the forefoot as well. The Edge Plus, it was like, it wasn't.
I mean, it was still high stack. It was the original Edge that was like low profile. The Plus was, it was still. Just not as soft as it should have been.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Mm, good.
Anyway.
All right. Yeah. Well.
Very good.
We have an interview coming up, so we can leave it at that, I reckon, boys. And perhaps we should do this more regularly with a few more shoes coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, hopefully chat in April then.
Yeah, I'll see you at the conference, Nitta. Hopefully you've got some good questions for me. Make me look good. Don't stump me.
Send them through.
And I'll hang around for your boring one too.
All right, guys. We'll see you later.
Have fun, fellas.
See ya.
All right. Welcome to Shoe Geeks podcast. Just myself today. We're missing the two other hosts, but we have a great replacement. We're here with Elliot Heath from Nike Running over in Portland. Welcome, Elliot.
Thanks, Julian. Yeah, excited to be here.
Well, why don't we just run through a little about Elliot Heath? What is your background? Set you up a little bit so we can chat a little bit more about innovation with you guys.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, I come from a running background overall, ran kind of high school and collegiately, and then after college for a handful of years for Nike and the Bowerman Track Club professional team, and had a few injuries in my career, ended my career a little earlier than what I had planned. But throughout that time was super fortunate to be kind of around the shoe development process and campus and really smart people working on shoes that I used to test shoes for, and then got an opportunity to start working on the shoes. I always like to think of it now as trying to work on the shoes that I wish I had as an athlete. So try to bring that mindset to it every day. But now since 2018, I've been a product line manager for our footwear team here in Nike Running, doing a lot of specific work on pretty much anything competition, like anything on the track or field, as well as road racing. So, kind of live, eat, breathe, running, kind of at all times of the day, and try to funnel that passion into the footwear.
Yeah, cool. It's pretty cool to hear that runners are designing shoes. Like, I know that there's a lot of engineering that goes into it, that kind of thing, but to have someone who lives and breathes running, it's a bit of a breath of fresh air, I guess, as a runner myself, knowing that someone like you is thinking about the shoe.
Yeah, I mean, I love doing it. I mean, we've got some great engineers that are runners. I mean, I guess my background was in engineering, and then that's what I went to school for, and then work on really awesome team of like really smart people, engineers, designers. And I think like really cool part of the team that I'm on now is just like how invested everyone, no matter where their background is, they're actually like super invested in getting out and talking to runners. Not just like the most elites, but also like everyone entering the sport. And I just think that's really important, is to like, yeah, understand what runners are, what are they feeling, what do they need the product for, kind of that mindset in the life that you live every day, you know, of like fitting runners and getting them shoes. So I think that's really important and something I really love about our team.
Yeah, well, that was part of my next question. Like, how do you fall into a role that seems like it would be a very niche kind of job to have, like designing running shoes, performance running shoes? The engineering stuff clearly like gives you a bit of an advantage, but is there specific majors at college you can do to get into the footwear industry, or is it more a who you know, who you're about sort of thing?
I think it's like more what you're about. I think it's more like, what are your passions? You know, it's interesting, like talking to our team, there's a very wide range of backgrounds. I mean, coming out of college and university, I mean, you just scratch the surface in terms of what you can learn at that point. But if you're just like passionate about runners and passionate about footwear, I think you got a lot more to learn and kind of expand your career from there. So I think there's some parts of our team, like truth, like I'm not a designer. We've got like true designers, you know, that like they do go to design school, and that's more the traditional, like what you think of someone, you know, carving and drawing the shapes that eventually become a shoe. But I guess the whole team works together to like influence the design and development of the shoes. There's certain parts of our team like that. Like the true engineers on our team, like, yeah, they maybe went to school a little bit more specifically for it. And then there's other roles within the team that maybe bring a more broad background. But I think what you find over time is that everyone that's working on it has been pretty passionate about runners or sports, athletics, and kind of just athletes in general. And I'd say that's like the biggest qualifier.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So just, there's a lot of like different titles within a design team or like a product team. Can you just give me a quick, I know it's very more complicated than what you can probably provide in this timeline, but a quick, from a very thought process behind a shoe to when it hits the shelves, what sort of stages and cycles does it go through? Like, how many hands does it go through before it hits the shelf?
Yeah, it might vary based on the shoe, you know, like for a product where it's really pushing innovation, maybe, and trying to make a big change, that could start the furthest out with our innovation team, where we have like a, you know, full building of people working on just innovation, like, you know, trying to fail or, you know, hit success 1 out of 100 times of just like truly pushing the edge of innovation. And that can start very long in advance. That can start, you know, 8 years in advance, just working on concepts. And then as those concepts get more and more refined down, about anywhere from 2 to 4 years out is when like an inline product team would start to blend in with that innovation group and start to refine those concepts a little bit more and start to then really create a more targeted brief as to where you're going to take those concepts into like a final shoe, you know, what the end user, what the end athlete looks like, or who that might be and who it's going to serve most commonly. And then it really gets refined down to there from that crossover point of innovation and then working on it up until about anywhere from 6 to 9 months out from when a shoe would actually launch. That last like 6 to 9 months is kind of like scaling manufacturing and everything and working out those side of things. So everything's prototype up until that point. And then it's then it gets more into manufacturing.
Yeah. All right. And when does the product?
I was going to say like the less, like, there's other shoes where you're not trying to push as much innovation and it might be a shorter timeline. You may not cast it so wide and you're trying to stay a bit more consistent with something. And so that'd be more on the 1.5 to 2 years timelines.
Okay. Yeah. The I did visit the campus in 2019, and we spent a bit of time with John Dimoff down at the I think it was called the Kitchen, was it back then or something? That blew me away how creative and how out of the box those guys were down in that little room. And that little lab, it was almost like a crazy science lab down there. I had no idea that that's how people think. And like, I'm not a creative guy. And so it was almost like watching someone compose music down there, like plucking ideas out of the air and trying to make it real, like converting their dreams into reality.
Yeah, I mean, we've got, so if it's, I think the Kitchen is the right name, you know, because we've got some real chefs putting together amazing ingredients and coming up with, yeah, crazy recipes. And I think that's kind of like our innovation team at its best. And like the way we think about it is, I mean, it's amazing, like having those people and then matching it up with the ability to then go out and work directly with athletes and just like let an athlete's voice guide it. And it's amazing to be able to have the resource to come back and iterate very fast. And that sort of innovation and development process is like so key to us. It's kind of the combination of those expert chefs in the kitchen and people working on the projects like that combined with really great athletes is kind of when, yeah, what makes it great. So I love that part of it. I've seen kind of both sides and fortunate enough to like test some of the shoes along the way as an athlete. And then now seeing the other side, it's cool to blend those two worlds and expand the understanding of both sides of those worlds, expand the, you know, the kitchen's understanding of the athletes and the athlete side of the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. I imagine that there would be some breakdown there between like the crazy chef and the person actually eating the food at the end. Look, we're here today to talk about the AlphaFly 3. So look, not a lot of people have got their hands on them yet because the release was pretty limited first off over here. So, but the feedback has been exceptional. Maybe one of the best received shoes, since maybe Vaporfly Next Percent, I would say, where it's unanimously kind of loved by everyone that sort of put it on. Can you explain to me when the brief came in for, well, the main brief when you were looking at the next version of AlphaFly after the 2, what did you want to create? What changes were you looking at making? And do you reckon you you executed the changes you wanted?
Yeah, I mean, I would say overall, it's really exciting to hear that it's being received that way from you guys and just the athletes that you've been able to talk to about it. But yeah, we were really excited. And I would say overall, just as a team, we're really proud of kind of what came to market. It was our most tested racing shoe that we've ever had. So we really just pushed the limits on that. We really, a couple of things, like we wanted to, you know, it's obviously something, it's a world record breaking shoe. You know, we want to go after the pinnacle edge of working with the most elite athletes, but we've also just been on a journey with athletes in general in understanding the new racing shoe technology. And I get super excited about expanding the experience of racing shoes to so many more people, you know, without taking anything away from the best in the world and what they're chasing. Like we want to make the best shoe possible for them, but the cushion shoes and like having a thicker stack height shoe and a racing shoe, it's amazing what that can even change to someone's experience, all runners' experience with like the sport of running and marathoning especially. So that's really exciting. Like we wanted to keep on that journey. And I guess one of the big things that came up with that was just, we wanted for just like more accommodating of everyone's stride. It's pretty easy to notice right away that you ended up with a connected bottom the first time for the AlphaFly, not something that was there in the 1 and the 2. And I think that just was something really positively perceived from our elites, as well as other athletes running. Even for the elites, you know, like not everyone's got the same foot strike. Even if you do have a great foot strike, you know, talk to me at 35K, you know, things might change a little bit. And so having a little bit more accommodation and smoother transition for all foot strikes is really, really big positive for the shoe overall. Then I think being able to combine that with adding that in connected bottom while also being a lot lighter than where we've been before was a huge, huge benefit and a goal of the team. We just had too many athletes kind of telling us that they had to kind of make a trade-off or a decision of like something like Vaporfly versus Alphafly based on weight. And so we really had a huge goal to bring that a lot closer. Obviously there are some constraints with just trying to bring thicker stack into a shoe and maximizing comfort and the needs of the marathon, that more material generally equals more weight, but we just tried to look at where can we possibly kind of, take away anything and keep everything that's needed, but take away anything that's not, sort of thing. Yeah. And then, yeah, lastly, just like comfort was a huge thing. Something that all runners can benefit, whether you're elite or every day or first to 10th marathon, like marathon's got to be out there and you got to be comfortable for a long time. Can't be getting blisters, got to feel like really confident with the shoe. And so we focused on a lot of areas of comfort as well. So yeah, those were the things that we tried to focus on, improve, while at the same time, just knowing that like air is kind of the engine of the shoe and what makes it the Alphafly super special. And so just really building around like trying to maximize the performance of that AirZoom technology, because that's something that, you know, we've studied a lot and understand to be super special in terms of the performance of the shoe.
Yeah, it's, well, I'd say you've executed those changes if that's what you wanted, because that's like as a retailer, we don't get the 2-hour 20 marathoners really coming through our doors very often. Like that's not a customer that really needs to be, we don't really need to chat to them too much about footwear. They kind of know what they need. They'll try a few things, but it's the 3 to 4 hour plus marathoner that does sort of look at these shoes and go, is this for me? And in the past, like racing shoes have always sat on this spectrum where it's very much at the performance end, and then you lose a bit of stability, or like, I guess towards, there's been a spectrum of really safe at one end, really fun at the other end, or performance and safe. And the unicorn shoe is the shoe that can sort of push further like one way and the other. And that's what I think Alphafly 1 sort of gave us. And then Alphafly 3, like to me, like you mentioned, the variety of foot strikes and the 35K mark, very different foot strike to probably the 2K mark. So I think you've done a magical job. There's another trainer out there. There's a jogging shoe from another brand that sort of hits that unicorn sort of mark. Whereas I reckon this could be that unicorn in the racing world anyway. How do you, like, you're a coach at the Bowman Track Club still, aren't you? Like, yeah. How do you advise someone who might be better in a Vaporfly 3 versus an Alphafly 3 for their marathoning?
Yeah, so that's been one of the things with the Alphafly 3 that I've been a lot more confident even talking to every athlete on, and just feeling like the Alphafly is going to be better for them, even if they, again, as you get later in the race, just the confidence in the extra cushion and the stack. It's something that like you don't often get to kind of push that or experience, you know, get to that zone of super deep into training where you start to experience the benefits of fatigue and that extra cushion, protection from the impact. And I would say just with the 3 as well, the hesitation from athletes has really just kind of gone away. Like, the Vaporfly, it's funny, like Vaporfly was foreign at one point, you know, and it was very new and different. And then now that's kind of like the standard, and everyone feels like that's super comfortable the same way that like an old racing flat was. And I think we're now kind of on that journey with the Alphafly where I think the Alphafly 1 and 2, like they were like special and different in terms of like the energy that they gave you back and maybe what you felt, but felt a bit foreign, you know, whereas I think the Alphafly 3 is it's special, but a little bit more familiar instead of foreign. And I think you get that, that feeling. There's been a lot more people talking about, like, I feel what I like about the Vaporfly, but I now also understand what the Alphafly is always there to give in that extra energy return, like the feeling of the AirPods. I think that's been a lot easier for people to kind of understand and wrap their head around with the Alphafly 3 versus it feeling kind of foreign with the one or two.
Yeah, that's how I kind of describe it. Like, it's kind of like a pumped up Vaporfly. Like, that's ideal, really, for me anyway. Pretty heavier type runner. Appreciate a bit more stability. I pronate a little more. Find like the Vaporfly 3 is a lot more stable actually than the Vaporfly 2. Not sure whether you guys find that, but I definitely felt that. But that Alphafly just takes it to the next level, like in terms of how confident I am when my foot hits the deck. Now, in the lab, you mentioned it's the most tested shoe you've ever had. How does it rate in terms of like economy testing versus the Alphafly 2? And even if you put it next to a Vaporfly, like, do you have pretty set data on that?
Well, we tested, one of the big things that we expanded was, like, I mean, we've been doing running economy testing since, you know, the first Vaporfly and kind of the journey towards breaking two, but our testing has actually expanded a lot more into the other things that we're looking at, focusing a lot more with athletes on, not just like in the moment of economy, but also what's that doing to helping you kind of build your training over time? What does it look like kind of even using the shoes in training and recovering? And so, like, what's kind of the percentage athlete better that you can show up at the starting line, let alone like what's, you know, what's better for you when you're standing on the starting line. But we tested really, really expansively, again, not just with, not just with the elites, but we kind of expanded to all levels of athletes with the idea of kind of like, what is your breaking to? Kind of like, is it breaking three, breaking four, breaking five? We also had an incredible program with a bunch of female test athletes, or that were part of our Dreamweaver program, that were they're on a journey of like testing for a really long period with this shoe and others. As they were on a journey towards, you know, like Olympic trials marathon. So, really, really good and extensive feedback from them throughout the whole process. Focusing on like some of the numbers, but also just like what seemed to be even just as important is just like, how comfortable is my arch? How comfortable is the shoe feel on my foot for 2.5 hours? I think once you focus on those things, actually, you seem to unlock actually paces and speeds that you weren't even really focusing on. Like, even though we kind of built it as a marathon shoe, we've seen a lot of athletes start to run a lot of even faster workouts in the shoe, than maybe even like intended or that was like the focus. But I think that's just an example of testing all the things and athletes being really comfortable in it. And then it kind of unlocks a level of freedom for them, I guess, in a pair of shoes.
Yeah, you're starting to talk our language now, or my language anyway, like around feeling comfortable late in the race. We have people like weighing the shoes and deciding what shoe they'll wear based on how it's 10 grams lighter, but it fits so much more poorly through the forefoot, or like it doesn't have much platform through the heel of the shoe, yet they're a rear foot striker. And it's... like, I love to hear that's how you're thinking. And it sort of shows through in the shoe, like all those little design features. One of the best things I've found in this Alphafly is that little bit more accommodating forefoot, like toe box volume. It just allows the foot to splay a little more. After 2 hours in the shoe, your foot doesn't feel like you're in a racing flat. It feels like you're in maybe like a lightweight trainer. And it's pretty special to get that with such like a light upper. Kudos to you guys on that. Like, again, something missing in the racing world is just the thought process around comfort.
Yeah, no, thank you. Appreciate it. We had incredible teammates in our Fine It team that focused a ton on comfort for the upper. And you can even see, if you look really close, like the toe box has slightly less material than even in the midfoot. There's these extra little bands that come down of material. And so that kind of contains the midfoot, but then it keeps the keeps the toe box even lighter and more flexible. Because you gotta have, like, as you push lightweight everywhere, you still gotta like contain the foot in the right spots. But yeah, our Flyknit team did an incredible job of just taking that sort of brief and idea of like comfort where it's needed, containment where it's needed, and then reductive where it's not.
Yeah. And then the Zoom bag, I've often wondered like what would happen if you just replace it with Zoom X and you just made like a one piece midsole. Is this a heavy component to the shoe? Is it heavier than foam, the bag?
It's the material that like create, you have to think of it, there's a lot of negative space in a Zoom bag, right? Like the material that might make up the edge of a Zoom pod would be, you know, it's not the lightest material, but then when you figure out or you consider that there's a lot of air or there's a lot of negative space that comes to it, overall it equates out very similar to a really, really lightweight foam. And then even though I think of, if you do kind of turn it over and check all sides of the shoe, like I have one here and you kind of look at, even though it does have, you know, a connected bottom to it. If you feel just with your finger in and around the Zoom bags, actually there's a lot more space around them. And so that design was really focused on, yeah, have the connected smooth transition of the bottom, but then also clear away area around those AirPods so that they could really do their job a little bit better. The more space that you give them, kind of the more efficient and magical or energetic they can become in terms of storing energy and giving it back.
These little columns that you see within the airbag, these little fibers, what are they made of?
I'd have to get back to you on the exact... Because I think it varies slightly in terms of our different, we have a lot of different kinds of Zoom Air. And in these ones, they're really there is like, so this type of air for us is really performance driven. Those fibers in there, they're on tension as the AirPods like inflated with air. And those help to kind of restrict or create the shape of the AirPod. So you can actually put a lot heavier or a lot more pressure into it, which is like higher performing, while still maintaining the same shape. Without those, they would basically balloon up. It would just expand equally in all directions. Whereas those fibers kind of create the shape for a performance AirPod.
Yeah, cool. I've never noticed how much cavity there is around it. Like the actual cavity in the foam where it sits. I haven't really noticed that before. It's kind of interesting. If anyone has one at home, they'll be able to have a look in there, try to get some light on the other side, and you can really see through.
Yeah.
So one question that I've had that's been popping up lately, it comes around your sort of elite marathoners. We're seeing a lot of them still prefer the Vaporfly 2, it seems, in the marathon versus even the Vaporfly 3 and over the Alphafly 3. Seems to be a lot of podiums you see at the end of the race. Like everyone, I don't know, my social media is flooded with the like shoe podiums, I guess. And it looks like the Vaporfly 2 is almost the most popular shoe to like for Nike, especially the African runners.
There's certainly a few athletes that are preferring that and still choosing it, but I've seen a lot of our athletes again make the change and switch over. The Alphafly 3 kind of being their first one that they have adopted. I think you'll continue to see that over time. You know, as you know, as an athlete, I think there's always like some athletes that just feel really, really comfortable in a shoe, and that just takes a longer journey. That's kind of on us to. You know, we still just want to get out and make sure we test and give them the time to feel comfortable in whatever they're wearing. We feel like there's great benefits to both of them. I think on average, you'll see most athletes really trending towards the Alphafly being built more as our pinnacle marathon shoe. Vaporfly is not going anywhere. Vaporfly is, you know, our most versatile all around road racing shoe, you know, from marathon all the way down to seeing really great success in a 5K or something like that. And that'll continue to be the kind of the case, but they're always gonna have like a little bit of overlap in terms of just some personal preference to it. But we'll continue to build the Alpha Fly for the benefits that we see for the marathon. And I think you'll see that trend kind of go in that direction over time as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah, on that, did we see Eliud Kipchoge wearing a prototype Alpha Fly in Tokyo? There's a few whispers getting around about maybe there's something different on World Athletics too, like in the shoe list.
Yeah. So we're always, you know, trying to push the edge of what's next. And the, you know, the, yeah, development shoe process is something that we've really tried to work with World Athletics on and make sure that we're kind of following everything, the guidelines there. But we, yeah, Eliud's, I mean, he's tested, I don't know, basically every racing shoe, you know, since the inception of the Vaporfly, and yeah, always working on more things. But he's loved the Alpha Fly in general, just ever since running the first, you know, 159.40. And so he'll continue to be a part of every step of, you know, Alpha Fly development with us.
So, yeah. Okay. Now what do we got for Olympics? How much license do you have here to let us know what we can expect in Paris?
I think you can just expect athletes in, are you talking, well, specifically to the
specifically
marathon?
Not really specifically Nike, because I know you won't be able to share a lot, but is there anything sort of that can come out and you can give a few hints on what we might see on the track or even on the road?
I mean, I think what you'll see, so just first off on the road, like we're on a journey. Alpha Fly's kind of started our journey of, you know, new racing footwear from 100 to the marathon. Alpha Fly's leading that journey. We know that there's been a lot of qualifications that are happening now, like for the Olympics. And that's kind of the Alpha Fly I'm building towards that is our first chapter towards it. So giving athletes the chance to really, you know, adopt the Alpha Fly 3 and train in that and have every opportunity to feel super comfortable leading into Paris. And we'll layer onto that with more innovation for the track as well. But really just going to give new innovation to everyone from 100 to 10K and including the marathon. So everyone's going to have something new.
So yeah, sprinters will have a new shoe, milers, distance guys, all new shoes. That's exciting. I love it. Now, one question we often get in store on the social media, you'd sort of get it a lot, is the Alpha Fly 3 has a demand that's probably exceeded anything I've ever seen in footwear in the running world, but the supply is almost at the opposite end of that. Like, this is the least amount of units I've ever been able to get from any shoe. So what is the limitation at a factory level when producing these? Like, why can't we make them like we can make pegs?
No, I think you'll just see that scale up, because like I was saying, like our goal for this shoe is to get it to a lot of people. And I mean, the one you're holding there, as you see, it's like it indicative of its proto colorway. We are under kind of rules and regulations to make sure we get shoes and we sell them kind of as quick as we can to look after the athletes so that then they are legal at the right times as those development windows close off. So as we've entered into this time period where athletes are qualifying for the Olympics, and you know, you have like something like the US trials and obviously Tokyo Marathon and these other marathons that are going on, we're trying to get pairs out as soon as we can with that initial batch to make sure it's legal, and understand that doesn't service everyone, but certainly have plans to scale it all up and make sure that this shoe gets out to all of those athletes. I really hope and look forward to that like happening coming forward, but this is just kind of the first amount that we could get out and get straight to the athletes.
Good problem to have, I'd say.
Yeah. I think it's just an adaption too of like, again, hopefully we're on a journey where more and more people are just kind of understanding or getting excited about that, like they can have a racing shoe for them. Go back to racing flats, that just wasn't probably a recommendation that you were given to a lot of athletes walking into your store. But I think as that market expands, it's pretty exciting to have the best shoe that we've ever had for elites as well as everyone else.
Yeah, 100%. Like, just because you're slower doesn't mean you don't deserve a fun shoe. And it's been a quite an elitism type feel with racing shoes in the past. And so, yeah, things are changing now and it's great. Like, especially the one thing that I love is just how comfortable the shoes are now. Like, you don't have to sacrifice that. I reckon that's a game changer for you with this shoe in particular.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right, Elliot, thanks for coming on, mate. Appreciate you giving up your time. Also, thanks to Nike for allowing you on to chat to us. Like, it's great to have one of you guys on now and to hear from the source, basically.
Sounds good. Yeah, I'm glad you're liking it, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
This week's episode of Inside Running Podcast is proudly sponsored by Nike. Marking the next chapter of Nike's relentless focus on innovating for all runners, the new Nike Alphafly 3 delivers marathon speed to push beyond what you thought possible. It's their lightest and most tested Alphafly ever, validated by elite marathoners and designed to help all athletes chase their personal best in the marathon, no matter their pace.